always going to have turf battles between ministers. I think this was kind of a line ball call. No one, not even the government, was saying that the previous system was particularly flawed. This new system can work, but there's obviously been, you know, a bit of turf battles on the way through to the Prime Minister's announcement.
Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations of Politics podcast. The Prime Minister has announced the biggest overhaul of national security arrangements in four decades, with the centrepiece the establishment of a Home Affairs Department. The new ministry, which will be under the present Immigration Minister Peter Dutton, will bring together agencies including ASIO, the Federal Police, Border Force and the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission. Many experts say the new structure is either unnecessary or a dangerous path to go down. Today we talk about the new arrangements with Peter Jennings, the Director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, a think tank that focuses on defence and security issues. Peter Jennings, in practical terms, what difference do you think this shake-up will make?
Well, Michelle, it will certainly launch a number of agencies and departments into furious redesign mode over the next 6 months or so as they give more substance to the rather bare announcement that the government made yesterday. I believe these changes can be made to work, and although there hasn't been that much focus on them, I think that there is a point to the changes to support a range of activities other than counter-terrorism, and they go to issues of cybersecurity, the security of critical infrastructure, ports, harbours, the electricity grid, and something that's become, I think, much more prominent in the last few months, which is foreign interference in Australian politics. My understanding is the Home Office will deal with all of those issues. And frankly, we've not been actually that good at handling aspects of those risks in the last few years. But we've got a long way to go to actually get to the point that this will be a functioning entity inside the Canberra system. And, you know, I think a lot of detail still has to be worked out.
Well, one of the criticisms has been that putting together the new department with all that involves will be quite distracting for agencies who have important work to do in trying to counter terrorism. Do you think that it will be a bit of a bureaucratic nightmare to get that work done?
I think there's a risk, a genuine risk, and I say that in part based on my own experience as a senior defence official. We used to have almost annually visited on us a major redesign of the defence organisation, and it used to absorb a huge amount of time as people thought their way through how to deal with these situations. And of course, the police and the intelligence agencies are always operational. They're always dealing with current risks, current counter-terrorism challenges. And whatever they do as they make these changes, they can't allow their eye off that particular ball, because that's the time when risks of terrorist attacks, I think, would become greater.
There's been a lot of talk about how partly this is to give Peter Dutton what he wants. He's an important figure politically from the Conservative side of the Liberal Party. His support is vital to Malcolm Turnbull. Do you feel that this is driven as much by politics as questions of security substance, or even more by the politics?
Well, I don't mean this to sound cynical, but my view is that all policy is ultimately political in one way or another. And of course, this does impact on particular power, the particular amount of power that different ministers hold. I think that's undeniable. It doesn't mean to say that the changes aren't necessarily sensible things to do, but in the absence of a sort of a deeper and more fine-grained set of explanations from the government about how these changes are going to be made, I think what it's done is allow people to focus in on the politics of personality, and that's a shame.
It does seem a huge area for one minister to carry to get his head across. Is that a problem?
It's a high workload portfolio, there's no doubt about it, but so is defence, for example, which covers, you know, operations and acquisitions and personnel issues. I think we just have very high expectations about what our ministers can do to deliver. It also highlights the fact that the Attorney General has an amazing span of responsibilities in the form of outlier organisations beyond the Attorney General's department itself. So I don't think we should in a sense, cut our ministers any slack. They know they're in busy jobs, and certainly our expectations are that they can perform.
From what we know, neither ASIO nor the Australian Federal Police were urging this change. How do you think they will be viewing the move from their present kennel, which is in the Attorney General's department, to the new ministry?
I think they need reassurance that this is not going to compromise operations, and I think they need reassurance that the new system will be as effective as the old one in terms of supporting ministerial warrants for their activities. There's always going to be some bureaucratic caution, I guess, about big changes, but mostly organisations, particularly ones involving the disciplined forces, if I can put it that way, they'll click their heels and get on with it now.
They are, of course, at the moment independent authorities. They will be still independent authorities in the new ministry. But do you think that there is any danger of them being drawn into politics more? For example, we do sometimes see the politicians wheel out senior police for press conferences, for announcements, which does associate them with politics. We've seen this with border security officials, military officials. What do you think?
Yes, I think there's a creeping risk of that, which really goes back perhaps a decade or more, particularly with politicians using military people or police as a sort of props in press conferences.
Always useful to have a man with a uniform
or
a woman.
Indeed, and I just wish it would stop because the services find it somewhat compromising of their position. You know, more seriously, I think, although ASIO and the police will have statutory independence continued to be guaranteed, what Home Affairs promises to do is to strengthen a sort of a central policy design that will impact on all of these organisations. And I think that's something that will test the limits of what's appropriate in terms of a sort of political direction versus what we want from some of these agencies, which is to be seen to be and in reality be independent of day-to-day politics.
Malcolm Turnbull stressed that there will be substantial safeguards in the new system. For example, the Attorney General will still have to approve ASIO's warrants, and some watchdog bodies will be transferred from the Prime Minister's department, where they are now, to the Attorney General. Do you think that these safeguards are adequate?
Yes, I do, frankly. I think one of the more positive elements of the announcements is that this consolidates the role of the Attorney General as the sort of chief protector of civil liberties and of probity as far as our intelligence and police organisations are concerned. For example, this also consolidates the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, which used to be in the Prime Minister's department, now into the Attorney General's department. I think that's a sensible thing to do, to kind of locate all of these, let's call them probity organisations, under the control of the Attorney General. And my sense is that this is a sensible step which will actually strengthen some of these capacities of these organisations to do their job.
Now, in terms of accountability, which is rather wider than just safeguards, do you think that this model will lead to more or less accountability when there's one department? Is it easier to perhaps hush up things when they go wrong?
Look, I think that for me, one of the challenges that will have to be worked out here is how effectively the Attorney General and the Minister for the Home Office can work together. I don't mean that in a personality sense, but I mean the both of them will be necessary to provide warrants for police and ASIO operations. That's often things that have a very time-sensitive nature to them, and they can't be delayed because of sort of handling errors between the two departments. Primarily, I don't think we really, frankly, have a problem about the behaviour of these organisations in general, and I think there are enough mechanisms to ensure that they behave as they should, or indeed to find fault where it's necessary to do so. So I don't think these changes necessarily help or hinder that situation, but we do have now two ministers intimately involved in supporting police and ASIO operations, and we have to be confident that that will operate, I think, quickly and effectively.
Just on this question of warrants, it does seem that it's open to criticism potentially on a couple of grounds. One is that you get this doubling up of the whole operation. But secondly, wouldn't there be a temptation for an Attorney General who no longer has responsibility for ASIO to do a tick and flick when he or she was presented with a request for a warrant, because they think, oh, well, the Home Affairs Minister who now has ASIO is across this matter. He says it's necessary, so I just tick off on it.
Well, I think we've got to manage this to make sure that doesn't happen. It means the attorney has to constantly still keep themselves informed about the purpose of police and ASIO operations.
Which is a very complex thing when you think about some of these operations. You're not just reading a brief in 10 minutes.
That's right. I mean, I had a sense that, you know, maybe what's going to evolve here is a sort of a two-pass approach where the attorney is endorsing warrants on the basis of an assessment of their impact on civil liberties, and if that's appropriate. And then the Home Office Minister is driving them on the basis of operational need. Again, to me, I imagine that some of the 6 months that the Prime Minister says is needed to work out the detail is really going to be to establish how is this going to work in practice. Is that the right approach?
And while you can see that the Home Affairs Minister would be fairly clear cut in his mind about the operational aspect, an attorney looking at the other side of it would be balancing civil liberties against the operational need. So he couldn't just be looking at civil liberties, could you?
Yes, I think that's right, because if that was the case, you'd have the risk that there'd be arguments between the two and you wouldn't get these warrants authorised. I mean, in practice, governments all the time have to balance these different priorities. You know, I think in defence, for example, the organisation is responsible for managing defence exports, but also for promoting defence exports, and somehow you've got to seek a balance between those two competing priorities at times. So at the moment, this happens all in the head of one person, the Attorney General. Now we're going to have a system where two ministers will fight it out, and you could argue that that's actually a more transparent way to do business.
Well, that leads us into the whole question of contestability. And one criticism has been that there'll be less contestability of advice. This is moving away from the warrants issue, but general advice on some of these security issues, for example, whether you need a toughening of laws in certain areas. Do you think that argument holds any weight when you have more centralisation?
Well, I imagine that we will see the Home Office Minister become a member of the National Security Committee of Cabinet, which really in the last 15 years has become the key vehicle for government to thrash out the pros and cons of national security problems. So, no, I don't think this will create extra difficulties for the government, but it certainly does put a premium on that committee working effectively.
It's a bit of an irony, isn't it, that some members of the National Security Committee, like George Brandis, like Julie Bishop, have been against having this sort of structure anyway?
Yes, well, that's undeniable. I mean, both of those ministers were quite vigorously opposed to the idea when it was mooted a couple of years ago when Scott Morrison was Immigration Minister. And, you're always going to have turf battles between ministers. I think this was kind of a line ball call. No one, not even the government, was saying that the previous system was particularly flawed. This new system can work, but there's obviously been, a bit of turf battles on the way through to the Prime Minister's announcement.
And in political terms, you get the impression that the strength of the present system has been something that's inhibited the government being able to very effectively argue for a new system, because on the one hand it said, well, everything's fine, we just want to make it better, but it's hard to demonstrate in concrete terms what the improved outcomes will be.
Well, I think that's partly because of the absence of obvious process to bring us to the point where the Prime Minister made his announcement yesterday. And what I mean by that is at the same time there was another review that was released, the review by Michael Lestrange of the intelligence community, which if you read is a carefully worded, well-researched piece of work with finely detailed policy recommendations based on 6 months or so effort with Lestrange and his colleagues talking to a very wide range of people in the intelligence community. And you can contrast that with the Home Office announcement, which was really based on, I think, internal discussions internal to the Cabinet, to the government, without that sort of groundwork being done to provide a sort of a written explanation for what it is that the government has in mind. You know, to my way of thinking, that's what's led to a rather cautious response to the announcement, because people aren't able to check the details themselves. And it really goes to how these two pieces of work evolved in very different types of processes.
Now, the Lestrange review recommended, and this has been accepted, an Office of National Intelligence, which will sit in the Prime Minister's Department, which will take in the present Office of National Assessment, but go a good deal further than that in coordinating the intelligence community. How important, potentially, could this office, and in particular its director, and we don't know who that director will be as something of a counterweight to the Home Affairs Department? Could the Prime Minister and this director, in fact, be watchdogs, as it were, on that department?
Well, I think the new DNI position, Director of National Intelligence, is certainly going to become a critical voice at that National Security Committee of Cabinet table, where officials participate in the discussions, and a much more powerful voice within the intelligence community as a whole. I mean, what I'd say is that our intelligence community has worked pretty well together, but it has been a collection of separate cats plotting their own course. The DNI is going to
cats
have...
Cats tend to fight. We're told they all work very collegiate.
Yeah, these cats get on in a kind of self-licking sort of way, Michelle. And I mean, again, it's not really an example of a problem, but Michael's report sort of makes it clear that we're not extracting maximum value by having the agencies work more closely together, and that's what the DNI will do. This person needs to have ability to direct resources within the intelligence community to help set priorities. And I don't think that sets the individual up for conflict with the Home Office Minister any more than it does with the Foreign Minister or the Defence Minister. But this is clearly going to become a very significant individual in the national security establishment.
The Lestrange review did not recommend either for or against a Home Affairs Department. Was this really outside its remit, or was it saying, well, that's pretty political territory, we just won't walk there?
I think it was fair to say that it was outside of its remit. It certainly wasn't looking at Border Force, it wasn't looking at the Department of Immigration, which is really the core of the new Home Affairs portfolio. I mean, the Prime Minister, of course, could have changed that. He could have given Lestrange another remit to investigate this, and perhaps in retrospect it would have been wise for that to happen, because what the report does is provide, you know, a very carefully thought through set of recommendations. But really, I think what the government was doing was kind of linking these two things together. So it talks at the launch about the Lestrange review, but it rather coyly doesn't mention that the review didn't actually come to any recommendations about the Home Affairs Department.
To be fair, we should add that Michael Lestrange did today say that he thought the Home Affairs Department was an okay idea. So it's not as though that review has contradicted that in retrospect.
Yes.
Now, just finally, the government says the shake-up is all about making Australians safer. Do you think we will in fact be safer in a year's time under this new structure, or do you think really, objectively, it won't make much difference to that issue of safety?
If it's working well, most Australians won't know about it. I suppose that's the first thing to say. The price of success in the intelligence world is often you don't hear about problems that have been averted. I think it does have the potential to be a successful organisation, but I'd note that in the policy world, the sort of slowest moving beast is one which is going through a business of design and implementation. I imagine that this is going to find itself considered by a number of parliamentary committees. The opposition, I think, has got a serious question mark over its own support in the final analysis for the ministry. So there's a lot of work to be done before it actually will be, as it were, formally up and running. And I think the test of this is going to be in that the fine details of organisational design.
It'll be an interesting process to watch. Peter Jennings, thank you for talking with us today. And that's all for our politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Berlage. We'll be back with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.